Welcome back, guys, to another episode of Advanced Warfare. Your main host, Ben, here, and my compadre in crime, Scott, my main man, my other main co-host, is here. Scott, what's happening?
Not much. Just getting ready for GW Chicago.
I hear that loud and clear, and myself, you know it, baby. I am feverishly painting Emperor's Children. I want to have a nice-looking army rolling up there. I am, however, employing the help of Contrast. But I am taking this times, I don't know, five times the effort I normally do. So hopefully it pays out. Some of you might be a little confused by that, but because I'm actually painting, not because I'm using contrast. we had some stuff happen since the last time we podcasted. We had Voltan get a little bit of a hit in a surprise move by GW and a welcome one. At that time, which we'll go over that in a little bit. We had the finals for Lord Marshall happen. The circuit here in the Midwest at Flying Monkey Con. We'll go over the top list from there. And the other big news is nothing, really. I think that's most of it.
No data slate this week. I mean, I know a few people were expecting that to maybe to drop this last week, but it did not come. So
yep, that's kind of what I was going to get at, is that there was no data slate, but we were hoping for one. LGT is currently underway while we are recording currently, so we don't have a winner there yet. Did have a little bit of other stuff going on, which we won't touch on this week, but next week we will.
Vic Vijay won the LGT Invitational. Because they have an invitational event that goes along with the main event, and I would say he's probably the favorite of the remaining top. I think there's eight players left right now,
and so I would say he's probably your favorite. He's like two or one in the ITC, so I mean, it's showing, doing the work.
He's number three right now, so yep.
At one point he was number one, but I believe he's fallen down a little bit, and this should boost him up substantially if he were to win this main event here. So
yeah, yep. Good he's luck running to a. Him. He's running an Emperor's Children, similar to what you're using, what you've been thinking about running. I think he's got Terminators instead.
But. Yeah, and you know, maybe that's going to end up biting me in the butt one of these times. But I just can't bring myself to do that. We'll go over my list later on. We'll do a little GW preview. There are some heavy hitters going to that. But obviously, who knows? I might pivot and take Eldar, but most likely taking the Emperor's Children that I'm currently painting. If I can't get them up to the standard I want to, I probably will just shelve them and take my Eldar, who are already battle ready. But we'll see.
The GW event is really interesting that you don't have to submit your list until, like, I think day of, to be completely honest. I didn't see, like, a list due date. I think you just got to show up with I think you need to have a hard copy still. Hard copy or two here.
Yeah, I believe in an email they sent me that they said basically put it into BCP, but if you don't use BCP, that's okay. We can, but make sure you have a hard copy of your list. So I believe in case somebody doesn't have BCP, you're supposed to have a hard copy of your list. That's for everybody, not just the people not using BCP. That was my understanding.
Yeah.
So if you are planning on not bringing a hard copy, bring a hard copy.
Yeah, I'm excited for it, so... you and I both played in one of the store championships that GW has been sponsoring this last weekend. So that was, yesterday, I guess, when we went into that. But that was a lot of fun. I was kind of a last-minute add to it, but it was a good time.
Yeah, well, let's go over that. That's pretty important because guess what, guys? Scott won.
Yeah.
So your time to shine, my brother. Go ahead. Let's talk about your games. Both me and Scott went undefeated. Scott edged me out on points. So congrats to Scott. Scott, let's hear about your tournament.
Yeah, so I took my Necrons. I wanted to test out a version of the list that I haven't been able to get enough games in with. So I took a list that had absolutely no shooting in it outside of the Silent King. I had the Silent King and six Tomb Blades. So that was pretty much my shooting, other than like a couple little characters that had a couple shots here and there. So very, very board, like just tons of models and just going to control the board. No Satans, just went back to the Show Me Showdown list that I had ran that had 15 Wraiths. And I added some more Scorpix in, and I used the little, what Jack Harpster used at Nova Open with like nine Scarabs with the Spider and the Reanimator and give a five of Invuln, and they just are impossible to shift pretty much. Round one, I played a nice gentleman, Mitchell, I believe was his name. He was playing Deathwing Terminators. you know, on the scouring. So that made me a little nervous. Like, if he was able to really push out and like hit me hard, like I could be in some serious trouble. But he kind of, I mean, he made some mistakes on his secondary choices. He didn't take no prisoners. I give up, like, just playing the game, I give up 15 on that one pretty much with the Necrons. But he took like Stubborn Defiance. I think he took like Psychic Interrogation, and I can't remember what his third. Retrieve Nephilim Data was the third one that he took. Turn one, he popped his Psyker out and got a little aggressive with him and put him within charge range of my five Scorpic Destroyer unit and got it. He did get his Psychic Interrogation off, so he got 3 points, and that was the last 3 points he got of that one because that guy died. He was just like, nope, he can't be around anymore because it. With Necrons, I mean, if I can eliminate 12 points there and another, you know, Nephilim max he's going to get is 12 on that. If you're only scoring 85 against Necrons, you got to get all 85. You're not going to win that game. So
Right.
I think I won 95 to 68. He was able to get score his points, but it just was too late by the end of the game. I was just able to get done what I needed to get done. So.
Well, awesome job.
Yeah.
How about round two?
Round two was I played it was Chaos Demons. It was Bellicor, the Super Bloodthirster,
Scarbrand.
Scarbrand, the Chicken, a unit of five and a unit of four Flamers, a unit of Blue Horrors, and then two units of Bloodthirsters.
Bloodletters.
Bloodletters. On more or less on Planet Bowling Ball.
I saw that table.
There was some rocks, and we used it. We counted them all as obscuring, thank God, but it just wasn't great. I mean, he didn't have a ton of shooting, but his psychics were able to just like hammer me, and that's like Necrons are pretty allergic to psychic. It was a good game. I was able to like use
Oh shit,
Veil.
Eldar magic.
Yeah, I was able to use a Veil of Darkness to jump behind him, and I actually stole his back objective because he had talked to friends. And he understood how to play Necrons. You just got to rush him. You just go at him as hard as you can, and like that's what he was doing. He's just coming down my throat, but I was able to get a significant unit to the backside, and I stole his back objective. So I was able to zero him on primary one turn, and then he did Warp Ritual, and I had stopped him every single turn on it, and then except for one time, so he had 3 points on it, and he went to go cast it again. He rolled an 11 to get it off. I rolled Boxcar to deny it, and I won the game by 1 point.
Ouch,
So,
town, population,
yeah.
Martin.
So 77-76. The Silent King. He killed Bellicor. That was pretty hilarious.
Bellicor's like,
It
I'm
took.
gonna mess you up. Silent King's like, nah, bro.
Yeah, I was pretty hot on my four ups. I was able to kill the Bloodthirster too through shooting, and then also just
Your non-existent shooting killed a bloodthirster?
well, I shot the Meneers at him. I had 3 rounds of shooting at him, and I finally got enough to get
Okay,
him
this is over
down.
several turns. I was like, I don't know any
Yeah, this.
shooting that can just ace Bellicor.
I have no, not Bellicor. This is the Bloodthirster. I was able to like. It took me 4 turns, but I got him, and then I got Bellicor in turn five. So, but the Scarbrand basically he got stuck killing Scarabs all game. He it took
Haha.
him it took him 4 turns to kill, five Wraiths and nine Scarabs and three Bikes on one objective. And that was probably the biggest fault of his list is like outside the Bloodletters, he had no OPSEC in his list, so I just had to get a model on the objective, and it was mine. So, that helped me a lot there, but that's one of the games where I realized I do need shooting in this list, so I'm making some modifications to get some destroyers back in there to like do some actual shooting. So,
Yeah, I think Scott's verbiage to me was be honest, and I'm like shooting.
yeah, you need guns, and then round three, I was in the top pair. Ben and I were 1 point apart at that point in time. I had 172. You had 171. Another guy jumped in front of both of us, so I was playing him.
He actually
He
was
was,
tied with points with you.
oh, was he tied with me? Okay,
Yep.
but he was playing Space Wolves. Dave Armand, kind of a local guy here in Minnesota, good player.
Debatable.
He unfortunately had to go first, which most of the time Necrons want to go first, but like because he went first, he was not able to get any first turn charges off or anything like that. So he missed Warrior Pride. His secondary choices were a mistake again. He didn't take No Prisoners. He would have gotten at least 10 or 12 on No Prisoners, I think, if he had taken it. But he took Glory Kills, which is like if you do damage to a character or vehicle, you get like some points. And like, and then he had like his war, like if his Warlord stands on objective or gets fights in melee, gets points. Well, his Warlord died turn three, so that was, he got 5 points there, and then, or 6 points. And then the glory kills, my two little characters just sat in the back, and the Silent King died turn four and blew up and actually killed like half his army when he blew up, because you roll 10 inches on your 2d6 range and then roll a lot of d6s. So it was pretty intentional. The Silent King went in to die and blow up. That was his goal in life on that move. So, and it worked.
You don't have any mortal saves? Suicide mission time.
I mean, I killed a dreadnought. I knocked another dreadnought down to 2 wounds, and I killed like a character on the middle objective. And two, I'd rolled a 6 into his eradicator, so I only had 2 of them left. And he just didn't have the resources to, like, because it was the bomb mission, so he didn't have any resources to drop bombs at the end, because I'd already killed all of his dogs off, because I know what they do. And I was just able to keep him out for Purge of the Vermin and just max those points out. So I ended up winning that game pretty handily. I think it was like a 10 or 15 point difference on that game. So, which allowed me to beat Ben by, I think I outpaced you by 5.
Five points.
This RTT did a little thing that did something. Their ruling was a little odd. Most RTTs I've attended, you get the 10 points for free in every game you ever played, whether your stuff is painted or not. This RTT actually ruled that if your stuff wasn't fully painted, you didn't get your 10 points. So Ben missed out on 30 points there. So there's an asterisk there in my opinion.
No. You don't eat no asterisk there, Scott. You won fair and square, baby. The only thing I'll say about that is that tournaments need, if they put, like, the only gripe I have about it is that the tournament said painting not a requirement. So I showed up with not a painted army in anticipation of that. But it turns out that painting was a requirement, meaning that
you could play.
You still weren't going to get the battle ready. Yeah. And I was like, okay. I get it, but it's still frustrating because, like, I could have brought my Emperor's Children list. I brought the Iwog, which is still very good. Just not what I wanted to play, because I wanted to practice for the GW event. So I still have models in production for that. So
I don't think it changes what you would have played, I mean, to be honest.
That's true. All right, you're fair. That's fair.
I mean, you still came in second with all that. So, I mean, the odds of somebody outscoring you. It took Necrons, fully painted, to do it. So
took my Advanced Warfare compadre to do it, baby.
Yeah, yeah. So that was fun. I had a great time.
Good.
It was fun just hanging out with everybody. I haven't been to an RTT in probably 6 months or more. So it was a good time getting out to see some of the crowd. It's always interesting at RTTs because here in the Twin Cities, at least, it's interesting because, like, you can play a guy who could be his first event ever, he's playing it, and he's just got his fun, fluffy list, or you could play Ben Sherwin round one.
Or James Kelling, kind of, or Charlie Andre, or Scott Blagan.
Yeah, Blagan. Yep. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the variety of what you can actually play in an RTT is pretty crazy, and honestly, here in Minnesota, it's like, if you can win an RTT, I feel like you can win a GT, just because of how good the quality of opponents are.
No joke. That is very true. Tyler DeVries plays very well too. He does RTTs every once in a while.
Yep. Mm. Yeah, I mean, you got Jeremiah and Dave Armon. I mean, Jeremiah's won GTs too. So, guys that are capable of getting in the top 10 on the regular at most of the Midwest GTs are at our RTTs on the regular, which is great. It just makes our community that much stronger.
Agreed. It does frustrate some people who are trying to learn, because obviously, playing somebody of that high caliber, sometimes you're like, you know, I feel like the wool was pulled over my eyes because I don't quite understand what was going on. And that's okay. But here at Advanced Warfare, we're here to help you with that.
Yeah, honestly, that's on the better player's job to be crystal clear what you're doing with them. So you're not making the person feel like gotcha 40K. Because, I don't know, I'm sure you know, like, within, like, the first turn or two of playing someone, you got a pretty good understanding of like what their skill set is and what they're expecting, you know.
That's fair. That's true.
And you can kind of, I mean, you're still going to score. Unfortunately, like battle points is a thing for determining who's the winner, so you got to score your points, but you can do it nicely. Like Matt Root is like one of the best people at doing this. Like he makes you feel great as he's scoring 100 on you and you're scoring 30, you know.
Yep, that is his superpower. He is very good at that. Yeah, like a good example of that is like my first round opponent in the RTT was the store champions was a GSC player, and then he made the comment. He's like, "Wow, I feel like you know you're my army better than I do. I might be in trouble here." And I'm just like, "Well, okay, put it that way."
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and that's just like, you know, and like even the guy running the event, like it was the first event he had run, so I had kind of was walking through BCP a little bit and how it works, and just making sure he understood what, you know, and he kind of asked what the ITC was because he didn't even really know what it was at that point in time. So I kind of explained to him what it was and just, you know, kind of the expectations of what players expect from an event. You know, it's like I'm like, you know, I know some people were a little salty about the paint thing, but like I'm like, you just put it in the note, like share more information than what you think you need to share on the event itself. Like put the missions in BCP, put everything in your post that you're gonna on Facebook when you're advertising, so people just know, and then they can make an educated decision. You'll get the player base that you want to come to that then, you know. Guys can choose to bring non-painted stuff, but they just know they're gonna miss 10 points, you
You're
know.
totally right. I totally would have just stayed.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't have changed anything.
Yeah, you're right.
I
In
mean,
hindsight, yes, I would have because
yeah.
reasons. But
Yeah, I
no.
mean, yeah, you missed out on your second glass plaque, you know? I mean, you already got one, so.
That's fair. What Scott's talking about is I won the other store championship from one of the other stores up here. We talked about that, I think.
This chain owns like four, three, four, five stores here in the
Yep.
Twin Cities. So,
Well, the cool part of it is this is a store that I grew up with. Like, I grew up playing at this place, the St. Louis Park location. So, they've kind of fallen off of Warhammer a little bit, and it looks like they're trying to get back in the scene. They're mainly a Magic store, but I don't begrudge them for that because, you know, you got to go where the money is. And Warhammer players, we love you, but you don't spend a ton of money on armies compared to a Magic player that spends on cards. That's just the way it is.
And when everybody started, you know, unfortunately, that's one of the 3D printing and things like that. You know, like you get into that mucky water and, you know, or just people ordering model. I mean, 40K is expensive too, but people order stuff off the internet versus like their local stores. But
Yep,
you
saving
got to support
money.
them or you won't have a place to play. You know, that's the way I
Yep.
look at it. So.
And you know, that's I'm just gonna touch on that real quick. I support stores whenever I can. I will always, if I go play at a store, I will always make sure I buy something, whether it's something as minuscule as a paint pot or a white dwarf to maybe even a kit that I maybe wouldn't have bought. And I encourage everybody to do that. It doesn't have to be something big, but just supporting your local game store, because just so you know, people out there outside of the mega stores, these guys, they're probably just breaking even unless, you know, they have some other means of revenue. Like one of the game stores here has a nice kitchen attached to it with a ton of food. I bet you that food helps pay for stuff, beer and stuff, but just gaming stuff like models and all that, unless they have like Magic singles. Because I don't know if you guys know, but Magic Singles is where it's at. I mean, you specifically get what you need. You can take the randomness out. People just buy that up. But anyway, my point being that helping their bottom line with buying kits and such will make your game store better. It'll allow them to support the game better. And if you're complaining that your store doesn't do any tournaments or anything like that, it's because their revenue isn't, it doesn't make sense for them to give up as much space as Warhammer takes to do an event, because they won't make the money back that they need to, because it is a business. A lot of these people are living off of this, so they need to make tough decisions. War games is something where somebody's going to spend maybe $1,000 on an army, and generally speaking, unless they're a hyper competitive player like me, that's for a long time, that's what they're spending, and that might be
It's a
spread out
year.
over years. So, like I said, please support your local game stores. It's important to this hobby right now, and I think it will be. Ordering online and China Cast, you know, I'm guilty. I've gotten China, especially with the supply issues. But just think about your local game store. Make sure you're supporting them so that your tournament scene can get better and the Wii get better as our tournament scene gets better. That's my little rant on that. Scott, back to you.
Yeah, I agree on that. So, no, I mean, that's kind of it for, you know, that event. So it was great. You know, I think we each got a little bit of store credit there, so I could buy some Votan. Should make that on me a little cheaper.
That Votan, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was nice. And, you know, I mean, we can kind of segue into the news with Votan. I'm looking for that data slate. I can't find it on the internet now.
Well, I got pretty much it memorized because I've been working hand over fist on these guys. And then to have a curveball thrown like that, honestly, I love curveballs like that. I know that sounds weird, but like I have to rethink my whole strategy. The only thing I don't like is that it invalidates my entire work on the previous stuff. But that's okay. So essentially the biggest changes you need to know about is that most things went up by about 15%. They actually did something weird here with how they increased the points. Instead of a flat, like a percentage, they just did like this unit goes up to this flat amount. As an example, the I don't remember how to pronounce this, but the Cthonian Berserkers.
Berserkers, yeah.
It's a model up to 30 points a model. So they went up to 30 points a model, and that's a huge increase from 22. You know what I'm saying? Like 22 to 30 is what? A 25% increase? But then you have stuff like the bikes, I don't remember their full terminology.
The Pioneers.
The Pioneers went up by 5 points. Arguably the best data slate in this codex. So I don't know who is like making these calls. I'm not saying that the bikes needed to go up so much, but I'm saying maybe the Berserkers didn't need to go up so much. And I can't help but think that Art of War might have a little bit of help with this, because all their lists had a lot of Berserkers in them and now they don't. And I read the Berserkers and yeah, at 22 points they were pretty damn good, but I don't think that they were let's increase them by 25% good.
I think that you're paying for the fight on death for free with those guys and rerolling charges. Like that's the fight on death thing allows you to trade up so well, which you know, everything that has fight on death in the game is either CPs or I guess Creation of Bile still has it. I think that's on a timer there. I think that's going to die real soon. It's just too good.
Yeah, I fought into that. It's not great.
Yeah, I mean, you can always trade up. Like, oh, I went in, I almost, you know, like, oh, you interrupted and killed me. Well, I just kill you back anyway, so it doesn't matter, you know?
Yep.
So, unless you got a good shooting army.
Just briefly going over what increased the most, the Hearthguard, the Terminator-esque guys, Einherjar Hearthguard, went up by 10 points a model at a staggering 45 per dude. I'm not saying this isn't warranted, because my list literally had 20 of them. So I can't just sit here and be like, that's too much, because I was literally going to take 20 of them. Now I'm only considering 10. Well, one, because of points, and two, because they are kind of fragile for 450 points. However, the tricks that they bring, I still think are worth it. So I think that this is an appropriate point cost. What do you think, Scott? Am I crazy?
I mean, they're custodies, like, level, and I mean they have the built-in, they're T5, a 2-up save. They don't have the invuln innately, but they have armor contempt and, you know, no rerolls to wounds, so that makes them super durable, and they have minus one damage. So, you know, in the damage three weapons, they're just like a three wound model, you know. In damage two, it still takes two damage twos to get through to them. So I you know, they were too good, and I mean, also just like the firepower they're able to put out. You know, they're not that great in combat, to be completely honest, but like they're shooting, you know, three Volkite shots or one plasma shot, pick your poison. But then that grenade launcher at D6 shots, you know, it's only 18 inch range, but a strength 4 minus 1. It's like
D6 shots a guy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, wow, I can really, like, you know, so 10 D6 shots, that's just, and because they auto wound, you know, you put enough 10d6 auto wounded shot damage into a knight with a 3-up save, he's gonna die eventually. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't, you know, looking over all the point chases, like the fortress becomes reasonable at 300. You know, it's not stupid at 230,
mean,
you know.
he was one of my biggest complaints because, I took a Land Raider for 280 and it was substantially worse than this fortress. Albeit T9, but still, like, nowhere near the amount of firepower, better transport capacity, and,
Way more
had.
durable.
Yeah, and it didn't need, like, stratagems to become super killy. You know what I'm saying?
All in all, I think, I know some people like you killed the lists, but we got a guy in our league that's running them, and he played knights, which is obviously a really good matchup for leagues, but he ugh, it was ugly. His that Terminator bricks picked up three knights in one turn. So two from shooting and one from a charge. That's insane.
Ooh,
What
I
the
didn't hear about
hell?
that. That is actually
Grenades
a
at
patron here, Jack.
Grenades at one, Volkite at another, and then charge the third. That was it. It was like, whoa. So
No.
yeah, because you could put that full reroll buff from the that call guy on there. So I mean, just super, super good.
Yep.
I think he went up what 20 points, so he's 160 now for the name
Yeah,
guy. Yeah,
and
the
that's
Destin.
reasonable. Because he changes damage to himself to one. He's just all around a good utility tool as well as, he can be kind of a beast stick. He actually generates a significant amount of mortal wounds in close combat. So he's
Champ?
not. What's that?
The champ went up 20, right?
The champ went
Or
up 10. The guy who went up
20.
20 is Uthar, the named character who I'm talking about right now.
The champ went up to 120 now with the mass hammer from 100.
I believe he went up to 110.
He's 110 base, but 10 more for the mass hammer.
Well, I didn't see that the Mass Hammer is points now.
It always was points. It was 90 plus 10 for the before. You're paying 100 for both altogether.
Right, now you're paying 110.
120. It's 110 base now to 10 more. He becomes less spicy.
He's coming out
But
of my
like
list.
the Forge Master, I'm surprised stayed at only went up 10 points. And that's the guy everybody's like the combo with the fortresses where he can make one of the damages that goes through zero. He heals him four as well. I'm shocked he only went up. That's with the Warlord trait and all, and the upgrade on him. But I'm shocked he only went up 10 points there. And like the upgrades all stayed the same. So your Psyker went up 10, but he's like a CP battery, so who cares?
he's still in the list. He could go up 20, he'd still be there, and I'd still hate his guts.
hate him, but you gotta have him. The troops going up to 12 was kind of a little bit
Was
of
kind of
a.
a shock to me because they were actually pretty balanced, I thought, beforehand. They were very fragile. I found when I played with them that, if somebody batted an eye at them, they would die. And like, yeah, even with the meta pack, like, it's just the first wound. The stuff that's going at them isn't like the big shots where that's going to negate something big. That's going to negate a bolter wound. So.
They're salamander scouts. You want to
Yep.
like say what they are? They're a salamander scout
Yep.
with better guns, but they're slow. They're not the OPSEC you're worried about. They're the late game OPSEC going to wander out, but like early game, they can't even get to objectives for the most part. I think there's several
It's
objectives that they literally can't get to.
well, I any time you have an objective that's 12 inches out of the deployment zone, that means that it's got a reach of like 9.5 inches or whatever, because if it's a 40 millimeter base or size
Half of
objective
40 plus,
with, yeah, half the 40 plus 3 inches, you literally can't get there with a Hurricane Warrior because he's 8 inch movement from behind your line. So, increasing their points, I felt like that little increase should have just gone onto the bikes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean the bikes with their 12-inch pregame move plus their 12 to 24-inch move, afterwards. And the amount of bullets they can put out, and they're OPSEC too, so it's like they make me more nervous than the troops, obviously. I think the troops are just, they're 100, if you're taking a battalion, they're 360 points of tax. If you're taking two patrols, it's 240 and 2 CP, so.
The 2 CP hurts. I'd like, well, maybe not so much anymore because their strats got really hit with the and that's a good segue into the other change they did. Their strats got really hit, and
Yeah,
what I
the
mean by that is
synergies.
the synergies behind some of the warlord traits and the strats because they made the judgment tokens now do your auto wound still, but it no longer counts as a six. And why that's so big is that all these stratagems like the Ion and whatever that do these mortal wounds and stuff require you to roll a six to wound. Another example is the Magna Rail. That also needs you to roll a six to wound. And the problem lies is that you no longer get to roll the chance. So it no longer counts as a six. And if you roll that four up, you could just be out damage, which could suck, in my opinion. But
Yep.
I
And
just think for the fixing of this, it could have been done a little differently here. Just this is the only point that I think they missed a little bit, just because they took part of the codex and made it invalidated,
yeah,
which I don't.
they could have said on like the auto wounding stuff that they could have just changed to you may auto wound
Yep,
on a
exactly.
four plus or five plus or six plus.
All it would have taken.
'Cause like then at least gives the player, I want to take the risk and maybe I'm not going to wound him, but maybe I'm going to get that six 'cause I really want that six.
Right. Or like as an example, continue the synergy with Uthar the Destined.
Yeah. Well, 'cause there's a lot of things like, and the way the tokens work is like, I think if you complete an action, you get a token. If you kill something, you get a token. There's no may on that. You just get a token. The only may one is you may put one on something that's on an objective. So you don't. So it's like everything's gonna have tokens real fast, like we've talked about, like in our review, that getting tokens on stuff is super easy to do. So it's gonna be real fast that stuff's gonna have tokens. So you're gonna lose your opportunity to even use that synergy if you were trying to do it by not putting tokens out, which probably is not a good winning strategy to begin with. But I don't know. Maybe I don't know. Maybe they just don't need it. I don't know.
Don't get me wrong, they're still going to be strong, but I just thought that that was a miss.
Yeah. Yep. I know that was a complaint of many people that like looked at Votan just from like fairly objective people I respect that like were like pretty objective about Votan in general. 'Cause
I mean,
there are plenty of naysayers that are like, oh my God, it's junk, it's garbage.
with the Voltan, I think they're still going to be ridiculously strong, but I
Oh,
think that
they're so
this, like I
good.
said, this is a missed opportunity. So.
Yep. And I mean, yeah. Yep. I feel like they might have went a little heavy-handed, but I just feel like they just kind of wrecked the synergy in the list. Like they didn't understand what it was supposed to do. So, and that's what it feels like.
Yeah, and it's a kind of a bummer because, like, that was kind of cool, you know, because a six to wound is pretty hard to do. So, I mean, you can keep the Magna Rail like an attempt, I think. I think we should plea for that because the Magna Rail was strong before. I don't think it was busted. We've dealt with freaking rail guns and Tau since the release, so I don't think it's overly tuned. But you still got now with that, it's like I don't even know if I'm taking rail guns because at a certain point they just become inefficient because yeah, they're a good hammer gun because they still auto wound, but they don't ignore invulns anymore and they don't splash damage onto stuff that dies. And the reason that that's a bummer is not because, like, yeah, it's overpowered, but it's not overpowered. It's part of the point cost built into the gun that is now invalidated, and now the point cost on that actual platform went up as well. So overall, I just think that, you know, I'm questioning whether or not I'm going to take that. And I don't know if that's a good thing or not because it's a cool new weapon. And the other weapon that they came up with is beam, so it also took a hit because all their stratagems are junk now. Well, I shouldn't say junk, but they're not nearly as efficient. So.
It, but I mean, honestly, like the army taking a little bit of efficiency hit probably isn't the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, you're not wrong, but I'm just like, you know, when they write cool stuff and then invalidate it, it's just frustrating because there's a way to
Yeah.
make it balance without doing that. And they've done so well with that lately, making the fluff match the rules, especially with like a great example is my Emperor's Children. Like my Emperor's Children secondary, Adorn the Canvas Eclectic, is not broken by any means. In fact, it's rather difficult to do because I have to keep track of a bunch of stuff, especially if I'm going first, because then I have to like make sure that like I'm playing defensive so I don't get overkilled in certain areas, and I make sure that I'm shooting more dead or whatever. And you know that seems fair for the Emperor's children because, you know, they strive for perfection and they are always, you know, now they're the Slaanesh, which is excess. They want to do stuff, you know, it is what it is, excess, you know. And then you've got like the Eldar, who are incredibly point heavy but insanely efficient, especially with the Strands dice. And you know, they made the Strands dice work. Everybody thought Strands dice were going to be crazy. I don't think they're crazy, but they made them work.
They're
But
strong, but they're good.
yeah,
They're
they're
strong, but they're
strong,
not broken.
they're not broken. And I think that they had a missed opportunity here. They just need to add that verbiage, and I hope we see it with the data slate. I hope our voices are heard. Just because you don't lose anything. In fact, you statistically you hurt yourself going for that six. But like there are opportunities with like the name character to change it to a six, and you can't even do that if you auto wound, so.
And like I guess like one of the other things that I'm glad they made the change. I'm glad they made it fast. I just part of me wishes it would have been done before release, because a lot of the conspiracy theorists out there, they sold all these starter sets to everybody and then nerfed it and quote unquote killed it.
I don't
There's
think they
some
killed
feels.
it, but
I
whatever.
don't think so either. That's the that's like these conspiracy theorists out there that think GW is just all about, like. Like they just have this master plan. They're gonna, release new models, sell them all, and then nerf it into the dirt. I don't think they do that on purpose at all.
Anybody who thinks GW is out here to make a mega profit is like, you're
We're trying to make.
100% correct because it's a business, but that doesn't mean they're trying to outsell stuff by making broken rules and then nerfing it. That is
Horrible
way
business
too
model.
comp yeah, that is way too complex of a business model. And you know what? That would require some really, really intense planning that I don't think that they do. I don't
Don't
think the
attribute
rules
anything to
team.
malice that can be described by like incompetence.
Right,
You know
yeah,
that.
right. I don't think that the rules team sits down with the logistics and the development team or, for the molds and such and be like, look, this is what's coming out. Make it busted so that we can sell this stuff. Okay, this is what we're making. So make the rules this strong so that we can sell X many. That conversation never happens. I guarantee it. And that is just, that's, I don't like quoting this guy very often. I don't know if he listens to the podcast, but this is what, one thing that James Kelling said, and I love James, don't get me wrong, but like sometimes he goes a little bit of an intense opinions. But this one, he was correct. Anybody who thinks GW does that doesn't really understand what that does for the game. Yes, in the short term, it sells models. For the long term, it's a bad business model. Your business will fail doing so. So he is
100%.
not wrong with that. So, I mean, it's kind of like I'll use a restaurant analogy here because obviously I'm a chef and it's what I have to relate to it. If I've got this really cool dish that I really want to sell, if I really want to sell it, I'm gonna put garlic mashed potatoes on it, right? Because garlic mashed potatoes is one of the easiest sides to make that has, the biggest recognize, it's recognized the easiest. They're like, oh, I love those potatoes, so let's get the seared duck breast or whatever, and I'm gonna sell more of those duck breasts because it has the mashed potatoes, but eventually people are just not going to get the duck breast because they've already had it and the mashed potatoes are on other dishes at other places now. So there's nothing that's making me want to come back and buy that duck breast again because I already sold it once with the mashed potatoes and now I'm trying to struggle to figure something else. So if I try to put those mashed potatoes with something else, eventually people are going to be like, oh, well, I already had the duck with mashed potatoes at your place. Why do I need the sea bass with mashed potatoes now? You know what I'm saying? So, and that's kind of like with broken rules, is eventually people will just stop going because it's not interesting anymore. There's no live light to it. There's nothing to keep business coming in. And that's exactly like what James was talking about when he told me that. And that's, I full-heartedly agree there. Like you can. You can't
Yeah,
just
I
make
mean,
broken stuff and people will come back. That's just not how it works. So GW definitely does not do that.
and if you look at like the past like 2 years, like since the Drakari book dropped and we had like broken codex after broken codex just kept dropping and like supply chain issues affected the release schedule and all that stuff. But like those that I know the supply chain affected their bottom line, but that broken rule set affected their bottom line too. It didn't help things. I knew people that took breaks and I don't know if all of them came back, you know, but like we lost people out of the competitive meta for sure during that time frame. Because they just got tired of chasing, you know, they didn't have the finances to chase the broken metas, and they didn't want to walk in and go, well, what's going to table me this week in two turns?
Yep. And it's just like the GW little video said, it goes, nobody likes to walk up to the table with the game predetermined because the rules are broken. You know, they want to feel like they stand a chance.
Yep.
And some people are willing to make the concession that I'm going to play something not as strong because this is what I love. Like, I used to play Black Templar, even though there were better armies out there, because I love Black Templar. Well, I'm not going to do that anymore because, like, I'm at a different stage in my Warhammer career. But, like, I would definitely see people still doing that. And, you know, they'll lose those people. And they just can't, because ultimately the meta chasers aren't enough. They're just not enough.
Yep. So. Yeah. That top 2 to 5% of the competitive people that buy the hotness army every time there's a new hot army, or already have it, or just need to buy a few models, those people are fairly rare. You know, there's not many people that, you know, I've played four different armies this season. That's probably pretty rare for most people. Most people, it's 1 to 2, maybe 3. I think you've probably posted events with probably 5 or 6 at this point, you know.
Black Templar, Eldar. You know what? Let's take a look.
Yeah, I was just gonna.
Anyway,
I've done 5 actually. I got Astartes on there too.
Yeah, you're Adeptus Astartes for you, and then Black Templar.
3.
I think I only have 3. Actually, I was just thinking.
You do. You are. You have Templars, Emperor's Children, and Oathway. So that's. All right, that's impressive. I'm more of an army hopper than you are.
Well, I have a lot of armies sitting ready, but
let's look at last season.
I don't have a Grey Knight score posted. I feel like I should have a Grey Knight score posted. I don't. I have a lot of Uthway. Holy shit, I have a lot of Uthway.
Yep. I bet you're probably in the running for best Uthway.
I am
best Eldar?
I think behind Vic Vijay.
Azurani. Yeah, Vic Vijay is in front of you by 20 points. Now you guys both played Eldar, and now you're both playing Emperor's Children. Huh.
Weird. All right.
Yeah.
So weird. That's enough. We kind of rambled there. Sorry, guys. We'll get back on track now. Let's get back to this flying monkey and go over the top 3 lists there.
Yeah.
We had 2 undefeated, and then I think the number 3 was 5-1. I think number 3, if my memory serves me correct, was Nathan Bajorn.
Yep, the Show Me Showdown champ.
And I believe he took Necrons again.
Yep. Yeah, the top. So the top 2 are undefeated, and then 3 through 11 all had 1 loss. So, so champ was Dan Sammons playing Imperial Knights. So he's playing the Freeblade Lance with all the OPSEC guys. I think is how he was running that one. I think he had like 2 or 3 big knights and then a bunch of little baby knights. Let's see exactly what he had here. So he had 2 Helverns.
Who's this going over?
This is Dan Sammons' list. So he had Armory Renowned, the Free Blade Lance. He had 2 Helverns with Hunter as a Beast, so he had +1 to hit against vehicles and monsters. 3 war, or no, there's three Helverns in that, and then there's 3 Armiger Warglaives, and then 2 more Warglaives, then a Knight Errant, a Knight Meraxes, and then he had another Knight Meraxes in a separate detachment as well. So
pretty simple, pretty much flexing the strength of the 5 OPSEC here. And then the -1 damage from the Bondsman ability. Obviously here, big time too. And then the Hunter of Beasts, those are Helverns that just, they're
damage
deadly
free
with that. You know, that turns those auto cannons really deadly.
And it makes it really good into the mirror. If you're going to another night player and they don't have that or something like that, because then you're hitting them on 2s versus hitting them on 3s. So just increases your damage output significantly. And Dan had quite the run there. Like he placed very well. He only missed 46 points total, but he actually played the third place, fourth place, and fifth place armies as well. So I mean,
Ooh, baby. What a run.
he had a good he had a strong strength of schedule there. So
Hey, well, what is the first time for everything?
Two of those armies were against Necrons. So he beat the Show Me Showdown champ Nathaniel, and then he also beat Tyler DeVries, one of our local guys. And James Kelling was the he beat his Eldar, and James finished fourth. So, and then let's see, Ryan Verbeck, he's out of Forge World Columbia, so I think that's St. Louis area, isn't it? Where those guys come out of, or is it Columbia?
Kinda, yeah, it's near St. Louis.
Okay, so he ran Leviathan, Tyranids, so he had Neurothrope, Tervagon, Flying Hive Tyrant with the Reaper of Obliterax. He had 23 Termagants and 15 Termagants, and then he had five warriors. That was his troops. Three Tyrant Guards, three Zoanthropes, another three Zoanthropes, and then he had a unit of three Biobors, and then two Tyrannifexes with Rupture Cannons, and then he took a Sporocyst as well. So he was just doing a lot of mortals with like all the little like spore mines that the Biovores and Sporocyst can pump out, and then just controlling the board. It looks like Zoanthropes obviously pump out a ton of mortals. The Reaper of Obliterax does his thing.
I feel like this
Tyrannifexes
list is in
shoot.
preparation for Voltan.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm surprised there's no harpies. You know, that's the one thing I'm a little surprised. But I guess
I'm
if you're going
not.
into Votan, if you're going to Votan with no with harpies, they're just gone if you don't go first.
Yeah, and like they don't have a way to redeploy those harpies. And
Yeah.
granted, they probably can't get to them turn one if you deploy them on your back line, because Voltan's range is pretty short. But
But
that
harpies
doesn't
are
mean
actually
that.
quite slow.
What's that?
Harpies aren't that fast. I think their
I think they go up to
movement.
40, which is enough to get range to shoot, but probably not to bomb something effectively. But
Yeah, you're probably not gonna bomb anything turn one if you go second, or if you deploy in your back line, you're probably not bombing anything turn one, which
true.
is kind of their thing.
But you
But
know,
you're
the Nids are relying more on that harpy for less for bombing and more for that shooting. That shooting is what Nids are missing. You know, the harpies are the good shots. Some Carnifex are okay. But ultimately, they just don't. They're missing that component of their army, which is fine. It's okay to be not perfect, because if you're perfect, then everybody plays you and we have broken problems. We just talked big long length about that. So I think that it's okay not to have the harpies. But anyway, continue.
Yep, and then yeah, so that's his list. Then Nathaniel Bjorg, he's running Necrons, so he's got Silent King because every list has the Silent King. He's got the Chronomancer with the Veil of Darkness, and he took Subjugator Scarabs or Chordal Subjugators. I think that lets him like Crokhlyn intervene or something like that. I can't remember, but all of the Technomancer upgrades are kind of shitty for the most part. they're just not great. Then he has five immortals, so he's double patrol after the Supreme Command. He has the Shard of the Nightbringer, six Scorpic Destroyers, five Locust Destroyers, so no big boy in there, just five of the little guys. Then he's got a Plasma Sight, a Technomancer, five more immortals, Shard of the Deceiver, which is gives you the redeploy. Then he's got six Scorpic Destroyers, and then he's got 2x3 Scarabs. So he's got, oh, you know, I've played lists similar to this one. He's just got so many points wrapped up in three units. I always struggle with that to like late game because like the rest of the stuff, if you can just put shots into it, just dies, and then you just don't have anything left to like actually score points.
So it's kind of like a cagey Necron list that you have to play. You can play aggressive
Yeah.
with your three units, but the other three you gotta pretty much like play danger close, or they could end up just really dead.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, like, I know Dan played him, and Dan just blew him off the table for the most part. Dan was at the point where this game was pretty much over, like turn two is what he told me. That might not have been true, but I think Dan had him crippled pretty hard because like the Scorpic Destroyers are great. They're gonna pop out and kill one knight, and then the other knights are gonna turn and go, "You're all dead," and then the other six will do the same thing, and they're gonna turn and point at him, and they're all dead. And as long as you can just stay out of the threat range of like the Nightbringer and the Deceiver, they'll never get in on the knights to actually do any damage to them. So,
Right. You know,
the
I have
Scarab.
seen some Necron lists take the Void Dragon to sew up the knight matchup, but I'm not sure if that's like the best course, but like
The
I
problem, I
don't
think, with Satan is they're just a little slow. And yeah, that has a 24-inch range on that, but Dan's list has so much range shooting that, like, he just stays on his side and just blows you off the table. And just, like, the Necron player is going to score some points, but, you know, he doesn't have a ton of units to trade. Because, like, at least that's how I play my Necrons, is like, I'm sending just small little trash units out to go grab an objective, do my ancient machineries, and, you know, get my Treasures of Aeon points, and then just using like my other stuff just to keep you out of my zone so I can get Purge the Vermin points.
Right.
And you know, that's my plan. I don't want to go on your side ever. And like, I just don't feel like there's enough units to trade in this list. That's my one concern about it, you know.
Sure. You're the Necron expert here for sure, because I've never played him and I'm not gonna.
And maybe he's just playing cagey, because I know Tyler's list was also interesting too. I think he ran 2 units of the 7 Locust Destroyers in his list, is what he's been running, or at least that's what he's testing for a while.
I think that's what he
And
took.
yeah, he did take 2 of them. So, I mean, that's another one. You have 300 points or 600 points wrapped up in those two, plus 400 on the Silent King. You know, but he took a bunch of Scarabs. So he has 21 Scarab bases. He has both of the Scorpix, like Nathaniel had, and then he has 3 units of Tombblade. So he actually has a Outrider with the Silent King. So he spent 3 there like that. So
Gotcha.
I don't know. It's good. Tyler's list is good. I mean, obviously he took 5th. So I mean, he was at top table against Dan. So he was Dan's last game. But I turned on that game and it was like 12 to something, 12
Not
to
gonna
like.
lie, I turned that on too, and I had to turn it off. It was kind of a bummer.
There was like three. I could see 3 Locust Destroyers in like each unit left in the Silent King. And I'm like, oh. And the fact that they still scored 60 points just shows how easily Necrons can really score points. But yeah, I know Tyler plays his style a little differently than mine. He tries to kill as much as he can and then go out and hold the board. My issue with that is Necrons just don't kill very well. Outside the Scorpic Destroyers, they're just
Well, I
not
think
that.
that they can, but not like they don't continuously kill, right? They're like, okay, I
Yeah.
kill one thing and it's a very specific thing because if I can't kill too much, I don't have a it's it they have a very specific profile that they can take on very easily, but then they can only take on one because otherwise it's way too many points. They're just not efficient.
100% agree.
So
I mean, and obviously, I Necrons is probably one of the few armies that I haven't seen consistent builds, like one build that's just kind of taken over. Like, this is the build, because you're like, you look at what this like Nathaniel's been running, and he's had great success with like the double Satans, and their name Satans normally is what he's using. He's not using the regular Transcendent and the Silent King. I mean, the one common denominator is Silent King, but then you have like Jack Harpster won Nova Open with like Scarabs and just like tons of Scorpix and some Ophidians even. And then Marshall Peterson had some success with running 10 Lich Guard, or I think he had 10 or 20 Lich Guard in his list. It was kind of a weird, but no Satans, but like also just taking like just durable foot units, I had some success with Wraiths. So, I mean, there's just a lot of different lists out there, I think, for Necrons. They're one of the few. They're all Eternal Expansionists, like Relentless. Eternal Expansionists, Relentless, whatever the fuck it is. Eternal Conquerors, Relentless Expansionists. So the OBSEC pregame move. But, like, there's different builds inside of that list, So.
Yep, I totally agree. And I think that's a symptom of the Relentless Expansionist, but
Yeah.
also of the fact that the strength of the Necron Codex is in the secondaries.
Yep.
So I think that that's birthing that Relentless Expansionist and all that stuff, because
Yeah,
they're
and I
not
mean,
going the Killier second. They're not going the Killier, what you call it's Sept. Oh, I don't remember what dynasties I think for Necrons.
Novak Dynasty, yeah. Well, and there has been Joel Wilson of Xenos Petting Zoo, I think is the name of their club. He did very well with Tyranids at like the MCM.
Yep.
He played the Niklik Dynasty, I think is how it's pronounced. That's an OBSEC, and they get another ability on top of it. He had some success there, but the common denominator there is the OBSEC. If you make everything your army OBSEC, shockingly, you're good at primary and secondaries, you know?
With Necrons, yep.
When your secondary is required to control objectives and everything's OBSEC, it makes and it finishes that turn if you're OBSEC. Oh, it's easy.
Yep. But, you know, the flip side of that is that they're relatively fragile, so it's not like it's an easy win, right? Like, you have to strategize how you're going to die, right?
Yeah. Well, that was like when I was playing Martin, the demon player, and like his friend walks over who had finished his game before Martin and I had, and his friend walks over, he goes, "Huh, there's not much Necrons left." And he goes, and like Martin just looks at him, he goes, "Yeah," he goes, "I'm tabling Scott, but I'm pretty sure he's going to win." So, just because of the stupid stuff like, "Oh, I got four scarabs. They can string between these two objectives. I stole both of them from you." So.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, so. It is what it is. Necrons are, you know, I feel like they're going to get hit in the data slate, but I hope it's not too hard because I don't think they're that oppressive, honestly. I think that you have to have melee, I feel like, to deal with them. You know what I mean? Like, sure, you can shoot them off the board, but, like, they're going to take objectives from you left and right, and they're fast. Or at least that's what the lists are coming out are fast.
Yeah, and I think it's the multi-model OBSEC type stuff. So like custodies actually have a really good game in them if you run enough of the OBSEC infantry, that like the troops. So you get, because you get 4 to 6 models of OBSEC on an objective, and then Necron player has to flood it with 2 to 3 units to take it. And sometimes there's just not enough space on that objective to put that many models on there to take it back.
Right.
So that's how like the games that I've struggled in. It's like baby knights that are OBSEC 5. So I got to put 6 OBSEC models on there. And most of my units, I think I have 2 units that have more than 6 models in them. So I'm throwing 2 units on that objective to take it from you. And that knight will probably pick up both of them if it's like a combat knight or something. They'll probably kill them all. So then I'm trading faster than I want to trade. And I'm going to run out of steam real fast.
Sure.
So, I think that's how you beat Necrons. And, you know, as oppressive as they are, like, you know, Martin had a great game. Like he lost by a point, so it was a close one, but like he was able to kill my army. It's not like Votan where like you just don't exist after a turn or two and you just can't do anything. You're just picking up models and putting them away.
Well, like I said, I don't know if that exists anymore, but we'll
see. I don't know if it does anymore, but like the way it was originally, or like, well, when the Mortal Wounds Nids was out, you know, like when that was first unnerfed and stuff, like you just put your models down and then pick them up. Mm-hmm. Like that doesn't feel great. At least with Necrons, you're picking up their models. You're still losing maybe, but like you're killing them, so
right,
you feel like you're doing something.
Gotcha. No, I totally
I could
agree.
Just be a Necron homer there too, so defending my broken army.
I don't think they're broken. I think they're very good. I think they have weaknesses. As long as stuff has weaknesses, the meta balances out, in my opinion. Yeah. But obviously those weaknesses have to be realistic, so
yeah.
And yep. They do and have a realistic
that...
weakness.
And there's some armies that just don't have a chance against them, unfortunately.
Yeah, but there's a lot of armies that are like that right now. Like, what was I playing against? I don't think GSC could ever take a game from my Emperor's Children. I just don't think they can. That's no, kind of... Right? Because they focus on melee. Their shooting is kind of garbage. I have AOC, so most of their, you know, shooting is AP3 max on their big gun. So even my basic Marine is getting a 5-up save versus it. And then they can't multi-charge without me free interrupting and killing something. So if as long as I do my trades correctly, I'm looking pretty good. So and
like,
I think
it's like orcs too. Orcs into Emperor's Children just be a bad time.
Yeah, you can't multi-charge me. Like your Wah turn, I'm still gonna kill a bunch before you can kill me. So,
mm-hmm. If they even kill you, because AP they're AP 1 or 2, and you have armor contempt. So,
right. So I guess my point is that, yeah, they have everything's got counters, but there's checks and balances in this game right now, and it's looking pretty good. You know, overall, Warhammer's looking healthy. They just unprecedentedly nerfed Voltan well.
To keep the balance there.
Yeah, I don't agree with all of their nerfs because I don't like invalidating stuff that, it's obviously there on purpose and kind of cool, but anyway, I
And
digress.
I mean, I think it's kind of interesting, like how you build a list right now, like how you're building your list is like you're looking at like the top armies in the meta, because there's no army out there that can beat every single army. I don't think there's one that exists. I think every army has a counter.
Correct.
And so it's like looking at what are the top like 5 to 10 armies that I know I need to get through to like win an event. And you got to find the army that beats most of those or all of them,
Yep.
And if you do run into one, and if you're the scissors and you run into the rock, you got to hope that you out talent them by enough that you can overcome that negative that's already there in the game.
A great example of this is my Emperor's Children do have a weakness, and it's Death Guard. And I hit that at Iowog, and without perfect play, I wouldn't even stand a chance in that game because all my stuff is damaged too, you know? And as much as I like, even if I had the Terminator bomb, the Terminator bomb would have been even worse because,
You're all damaged too, unless you're taking chain fists, right?
well, and even them, they're D3, so,
Slightly
so.
better.
Yeah, unless I'm swinging on a vehicle, which is
Yeah.
straight three, but like the Death Guard with the fight last and the never count as charging are just bad. It's just bad for me. I need to be able to fight first, and if I can't, it's a big time bummer. So Ferryman, Death Guard, counter Emperor's Children pretty well, and Charlie Andre took that at Iowa, and we played, and he stomped my shit in. So,
Yep. Yeah,
and.
you ran into a player that's close to equal skill or equal skill, and he had an army that counters yours. It's an uphill battle. You're not going to win that one very easily.
Yeah, I'll bite crazy dice, which didn't even happen. Like there were some crazy saves on his part, but like the only reason in my mind that those stand out to me is because I lost and I needed him to make failed some saves. And yeah, it was above average, but it wasn't crazy enough for me to be like his dice are loaded, you know what I mean? Like it was just
Yeah.
me being like, ah, I needed that to happen and it didn't.
Yeah, you warp
So
your perception a little bit of what should have happened
yep, I
because
do
what
that
you
a
thought
lot.
you.
It's fine.
Yeah, as a perfect natural reaction to a game. I've walked. I mean, I walk away from games. God, that guy's dice were just stupid that game. And then you think about it a day or two later, and it's like, nah, they weren't that bad.
The
It was just
situations where I needed him to roll bad, he didn't, and that's just what I saw.
Yeah, and like, I mean, then you th start thinking about what you could have done better and what you could have done to avoid those situations,
Yep.
I always hear a lot of people like, oh yeah, it just came down to one or two dice rolls. I'm like, well, there was probably 50 to 100 decisions before that that could have avoided that one coming down to one dice roll. So that's probably the
Right.
part you need to focus on more than that one dice roll.
Right. And one of the things I tell people that I work with here on the game is that we take the dice out of the equation as much as possible because that's how we play better. We play better by taking the dice out of the equation and coming to a conclusion where if this happens, it doesn't really affect me that much. We don't risk it unless we have to. So. Well, that's Flying Monkey. We kind of got sidetracked. It's been a little bit. A lot going on with the store championships. We got GW coming up. Obviously, I'm preparing for that. Scott's preparing for that. We got Kansas City coming as well the same
Yeah,
month.
2 weeks after the I'm curious if the balance data slate will drop between the two events or if they'll wait until after both events are done and then use the data from those events to do the balance data slate.
I hope they do, but my intuition tells me that probably not. And
Yep.
that, it obviously it didn't come today or yesterday. We're
Yep.
recording on a Sunday.
Because rules cut off for GW Chicago was yesterday.
Correct. So there's no balance data slate for GW Chicago. So that tells me it's probably coming in between the two events. And if it's not, they're gonna have some people that are angry at them. So and it's not I don't think it's just because they're doing a great job right now. We haven't been getting, the balanced data slates have been good. There's been nothing but good coming out of it. The just a reminder, the 2-inch rule did not come from the balanced data slate. That was from an FAQ.
Random Tuesday FAQ.
The reason I'm mentioning that is because I don't believe the people who do the balanced data slate do the write the FAQs. I think that they're involved. I just don't think that they write them. I think that the rules designers write the FAQs, or maybe a separate team. And the balanced data slate, I believe, is the tournament scene people like Mike Brandt.
Yeah, his team, I think, is the main contributors to that.
Correct. So,
I think the
like
rules
us.
writers do help them and stuff, but like I think the majority is done by his team.
Right. Because obviously the rules writers, you know, if you've ever dealt with a writer, you know exactly what I'm talking about, that they're all super
They
defensive of
love
their work. They love what they wrote, you know, because otherwise they wouldn't put it on a page. At least that's what I feel like I've met with
Yeah, I
writers.
mean, and like you always got
Kyle
to
McCord, if you're
understand.
listening, please confirm.
I mean, you got to understand when like they when they write these rules and stuff, they love the game that they're working on. Like these guys are not doing it to get rich. They're doing it because they love it. So, I mean, I understand why they're proud and defend and of their work, and they get a little defensive when somebody tries to critique it. You know, you as a chef, I'm sure you get it a lot. You know, you get a little defensive sometimes.
Yeah, I learned a long time ago though as a chef that I'm not going to please everybody, but the important part is that I take the criticism that is valid to heart. So I hope that they do the same. Don't mean to burst your bubble, but yeah, I learned that a long time ago. Otherwise, you know, but you know what? There are chefs out there that are just like, "No, my shit don't stink. I make the best food. This guy's crazy."
Oh, yeah, those people exist. I mean, it's the same in my job. When somebody wants to tell me I'm a horseshit project manager, I'm like, cool, you do it better than me then.
Right. Well, we
That'll sweat it.
rambled, we raved, we went over Voltan, went over Mungie. It's time for that shameless plug. So, Advanced Warfare here, we offer a couple of services. You know, obviously, we have an extended podcast where we do faction focuses, stuff like that. We even will write you a list for one of the tier levels a month. And we also offer personal coaching as well. You can check that out at www.patreon.com/AW40K. And you can check out, it'll redirect you to our Patreon as well, but it has a little more in-depth bios and such on our website, www.advancedwarfare40k.com. We've got four tiers to pick from, and you can do as much or as little as you want. If you want to get better at 40K, it's all up to you, but we're here for you if you want to use our services. So, again, do you have anything to add, Scott? I'm kind of closing her out here with some closing thoughts. My closing thoughts are thank you guys for listening. But for the most part, thank you for playing 40K and continuing to grow this community. And I will do my part to grow the community. And Scott, your turn.
Yeah, I think this will probably be our last public podcast before GW Chicago. So, anybody that's going to be there, I mean, feel free to stop by, talk to me and Ben. So, I mean, we're more than willing to say hi and have a conversation with you.
We are staying at the venue, so you know, maybe we'll shoot out a blast if we're at the bar or something. Come hit us up. So, thank
Yeah.
you guys for listening. We appreciate you, and we will catch you next time.